Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio. With us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the What Women Really Want department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah, I mean, this is a topic that we revisit from time to time.
Oh, yeah, usually right around the time my brother's latest divorce becomes final. Anyway, what's the theory this time? Come on, let's go.
It's not a theory, buddy. It's fact. I mean, fact. This is from an actual scientific study.
Yeah, sure, right.
All right, quasi-scientific study, but close. Here's what they set out to find. If you want women to be interested in you, what kind of a car do you think you should own?
Well, I know it's going to be one that smells better than your car. I don't think most chicks dig compost over, do they? You never know, I guess.
That's beside the point. Here are the findings. According to a study that was funded in part by the Department of Energy and General Motors, nearly 9 in 10 women, actually 88%, say that if given a choice between chatting up someone with a sports car or someone with the latest fuel-efficient car...
Drum roll, please.
9 out of 10 would talk to the guy with the new Prius or the Civic or whatever.
Really?
Yes.
Are you sure this is legit, this study?
Of course it's legit. The Department of Energy? General Motors?
Yeah, but are you sure the guy with the Prius didn't have a huge wad of Benjamin sticking out of his shirt pocket? I mean, that would make anyone chat him up, right?
It could be. But here's a particularly encouraging finding. 45% of people aged 18 to 43 say it's, quote, a fashion faux pas nowadays to drive a gas hog. A fashion faux pas. How do you like that?
Really? Well, when we take you out, you're a fashion faux pas. We put a bag over your head, but I guess you can't do that with your SUV, right?
Well, maybe times are finally changing because fashion is the key to behavior.
I guess.
SUVs were really a fashion statement, but now they're going out of fashion. Sort of like those nerd glasses you're wearing.
I kind of like my nerd glasses. What's the matter with them? Now, if you have a question about your gas hog or your nerd glasses or anything else, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Joanna. I'm calling from Minneapolis.
Hi, Joanna. So what do you think about this study?
I think it's totally true. I would completely chat up the guy with the environmental car.
If he had the hundreds in his pocket or what?
It shows he's practical.
I mean, how about if it's a little car?
That's okay.
You would probably assume that a little car would be efficient.
If it's a little sports car.
A little sports car.
Oh, like your Fiat, maybe?
Yeah.
No.
Anyway, Joanna, what can we do for you?
I have a Subaru Forester, and I replaced the front brakes about 2 months ago. And shortly thereafter, the car started making a lot of sounds when I brake, especially slowly, and it sounds like, kind of rhythmically. And I've taken it back into the dealership 3 times, and I have to drive on the highway to get there. And as soon as I drive on the highway, mysteriously, the sound doesn't happen again when I get there. And they're basically have implied, first of all, they tell me that it's normal for brakes to be noisy in the morning, even though it never made a sound before. And they've also sort of implied that maybe I'm just being hormonal because I'm pregnant.
That probably didn't sit too well, right? When you say it goes wah, 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 does that wah, wah, wah speed up along with the speed of the car?
I don't think so. Actually, generally, if I'm coming off a highway speed and I'm braking quickly, it's almost the sound is less than when I'm driving in the city and I'm, kind of either coasting or riding on the brake a little bit because I'm, slowing down.
And if you take your foot off the brake, the noise goes away.
Exactly.
Well, it's got to be in the brakes, obviously.
But yeah.
So when you get, make it this right. When you get to the dealership after having driven on the highway, you get there and you try to reproduce what you try to do what you did to get the noise originally when you left the house.
And it won't do it.
It won't do it at all.
Right. And it's about a 20-minute drive to the dealership. So I'm on the highway for 20 minutes. Now it's been 3 weeks since I've been there, but they keep telling me the brakes are fine. But I've got this new little guy coming on the way, and It kind of, everyone can hear it. If my husband can replicate it, I can replicate it. You can hear it when I'm in a parking ramp.
Does it sound like it's okay?
When they tell you that the brakes are fine, is that after they've looked at the brakes?
Well, they're telling me that they've looked at the brakes.
They did the brake job, and now they're telling you that
their brake job was good.
Your brake job is good. Yeah, and I believe them to a certain extent, but they haven't heard the noise, so it's hard to criticize them, without their hearing the noise. So you have to leave it with them overnight.
I did do that,
Oops.
And I asked them to start it up in the morning and drive it, and they said that they couldn't recreate it. Now, whether or not they actually did actually start it up in the morning, I don't know.
Can we try this hormonal thing again? Maybe we should explore that. No, you may just be more sensitive to it. You may be hearing something. Maybe it's the way you're driving it. If you're on a quiet street in a quiet neighborhood, mm-hmm. you may be hearing it. And can you tell which wheel it's coming from?
The front right wheel.
The front right wheel. I'm guessing you have a warped disc rotor.
Okay.
And what may be happening is the rotor is warped when it's cool, and when it heats up after a long drive in the highway, the noise goes away because the rotor straightens out. We've seen this a few times in our shop.
Mm-hmm. They also said that they didn't replace the rotors, that they cleaned the rotors.
Oh, so you need new rotors.
Okay.
Yeah, you have a warped rotor, and they should have either machined them on the car or they should have replaced them. And they need to do that. And if they do that, the noise will go away. It may be, in fact, that because they didn't replace them, I'm surprised they didn't, that you are getting this kind of noise because there's some peculiar wear in the rotor that was resulted from the other pads that were on there. Because the pads wear grooves into the disc rotor. So it may be that you're getting that, you know, for the first half a mile or a mile that you drive it, and then it goes away. I'm confident that the brakes are safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the brakes are not
dangerous. But if you want the noise to go away, you're going to have to replace the disc rotors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or you could forget about it.
When you got a kid in the back seat wailing, you're never going to hear this noise. So how many kids are you having this time? One or two?
I'm having just one.
Just one. That'll be enough.
Yes.
One kid will drown out any brake noise imaginable.
Oh,
yeah. I don't think I'd be worried about it. But to be on the safe side, you know, you might want to have another shop check it out. But I'm confident that the brakes are okay. In my mind, they're okay. And if you want the noise to go away, replace the disc rotors in the front and it'll be gone.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
See you, Joanna.
All right. Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, Tom and Ray. This is Glenn, and I'm calling from Lakewood, Colorado.
Hi, Glenn. What's going on, man?
I drive a very fashionable 1993 Toyota Tercel with 186,000 miles on it.
Getting a lot of dates with that car?
I don't know how my wife feels about that.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Well, it's making a horrible grinding noise when I accelerate, and it seems to be temperature-dependent. So when I start it up in the morning and start driving, I kind of hear this bad grinding, growling sound, and then after I drive it for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, it starts to get a little bit better.
Is it grinding or is it growling? Those are two very, very different sounds.
Well, I actually recorded it this morning before I left for work.
Okay. We'll listen to your recording, but I think, Glenn, you may have to embarrass yourself and make the noise for us.
No problem.
But let's hear your recording first.
All right. Here it goes.
All right.
I
can't take it.
Like you're grinding walnuts.
Well, I'd call that a grinding noise.
I would, too.
Right. Does this noise occur whether you're moving or not?
The recording that I made, I actually put it in neutral, and I was in the engine compartment and pulling the throttle cable.
Oh, so you were revving the engine up.
Exactly right. And then it happens whether I'm in neutral and revving the engine or when I'm driving.
Gotcha.
Right.
And it's definitely temperature-dependent because the last, this has been going on for, I'm embarrassed to say, for 3 years now. Every winter it seems to get worse, but now that the weather's warming up, it's starting to get a little bit better now. So.
But if you rev it up and it makes the noise, when you take your foot off the gas, does the noise stop?
When it goes back to idle, it gets a lot better. So you definitely hear it a lot more when you're revving the engine.
Okay, we got it now.
I think and if you had to guess where the noise is coming from.
It's certainly coming from the engine area, you know, right very close to the engine, and possibly where the timing belt is located. And I'm hoping it's something simple like that costs maybe a few $100, maybe like a timing belt or, you know, even something like, oh, you need a new oil pump or something, and not like, hey, you need new cylinder heads.
No, it's not that.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think it is. Well, the fact that you said it's been going on for 3 years made me change my mind. My initial reaction was it was likely to be a water pump or a timing belt tensioner.
Mm-hmm.
Is it coming from the top of the engine?
Yeah, top and to the left, maybe.
So it's on the passenger side of the car.
Yeah, from the front.
But then you said as it warms up, as both the weather and the engine warm up,
mm-hmm.
that the noise kind of goes away.
Definitely.
And does it ever go away entirely?
Not entirely, but much, much better.
Well, my feeling is that it's mm-hmm. in fact the camshaft.
Ooh, that sounds expensive.
And that's why when it warms up, it gets quieter.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, because the cams are whacking against the valves because they're so far out of it, they're so worn out, and as it warms up and everything expands, the noise gets diminished. I'm surprised it seems to you that it goes away, But it's, I have a feeling that it's more likely to be the camshaft than it is to be the timing belt tensioner. But at this age, it could be anything. It could be your rear view mirror vibrating and making this noise. I mean, everything's falling apart.
What you want to do is get yourself a hunk of hose about the size of a garden hose. Mm-hmm. And you want a piece that's maybe less than a foot long. And put one end of it near your ear and put the other end at all places in the engine until you really hear it loud, and you'll know exactly where the noise is coming from.
I just had a thought.
Yeah.
And you might get lucky here, Glenn. It could be your catalytic converter making the noise. The honeycomb could be rattling inside the converter, and that will go away sometimes when the engine warms up.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, but that's not coming from the top of the engine.
Well, but you know what? Those noises travel, so you need to get that hose, like Tommy says, and listen at the catalytic converter, too.
Well, I will try that.
All right.
Great. Well, thank you.
Good luck. And whatever you do, don't spend any money on this car.
That's what my wife tells me.
Yeah. She's right. See you, Glenn.
All right. Thanks.
All right. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Didn't you have the feeling that whatever was wrong wasn't going to get fixed?
Hello? Well, he's been driving around for 3 years and... What's that? Hello? It's like my 63 Dodge Dart.
Exactly. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jason from Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Hey, Jason.
Jason,
what's
Fountain
going on?
Fountain Hills.
Fountain Hills, right near Phoenix.
Oh, gotcha.
Huh.
I have a 1996 Land Rover Discovery, and my question is, how important is it to remove a foreign body from a differential before you drive the car?
A body? You killed somebody?
not quite. I was actually blowing the differential out before I put fluid in it with an air gun,
mm-hmm. ah.
and the tip of the air gun fell off into the differential.
Oh, and it's an aluminum tip, I bet.
It's actually rubber.
Oh, it's rubber.
Oh, it's rubber.
Oh, I know exactly the air gun you have. You have the same one I have.
Yeah, the El Cheapo.
Yeah, the El Cheapo.
Exactly.
I paid $6 for mine. I know exactly the tip. Well, so, and this has no drain plug on it, this diff.
It does have a drain plug, and I fished around with my finger and actually a coat hanger. I spent about 2.5 hours trying to get the thing out.
Most differentials have a fill plug on the side, which is like halfway up, which is where you were blowing the air.
Yeah.
Correct.
And also a drain plug on
the bottom.
Correct.
But yours does not have one.
Yes, mine has both of those things.
So why didn't you take out the one on the bottom?
Oh, he did, and it still won't come out.
Right. I was actually able to feel it with my finger early on in the whole process of trying to get it out.
Ah, okay.
But since then, it has magically disappeared into the abyss of my diff.
I'm pretty sure that rubber tip is just going to get ground up within the first mile that you drive.
Okay.
It's going to get in between the ring and pinion. It'll make a few passes, and then it'll be reduced to dust.
It would be nice to get it out, though.
Well, it would be. And if you did you try the following? When you had the drain plug out, did you try turning slowly the drive shaft to make the ring and pinion gear turn so that you might be able to move that thing right in the vicinity of the drain hose where you could fish grab it maybe?
I absolutely did. I can tell you I've tried just about everything, including jacking up one side of the car so high.
And how many days of work have you missed as a result of this?
Well, a couple.
So won't this thing float?
Oh, the rubber piece?
Yeah, it'll float.
It might.
I mean, what if you filled up the differential with water?
Or filled it up with oil.
I actually did try filling it up with oil and draining it out, and still
if you fill it up and it's right at the fill hole,
come out.
You should be able to get it to the fill hole, stick a coat hanger in there, and pull it right out.
That could work,
or a tweezer.
That's what I would do.
That could work.
It could work. Yeah.
To make this a little bit more complicated, I'm about to go on a 2-week Mexican safari style thing. And if this thing blows up on me, I'm going to be in a world of trouble.
Oh, boy. And so you were doing this, you know, you ever hear the expression, let sleeping dogs lie? Boy, you definitely have disturbed a sleeping dog here. And now, even if it doesn't fail, you're going to never enjoy this trip. Because the whole trip is going to be fraught with anxiety about this stupid little rubber tip. And let's go back nine steps.
There's not many places it can go.
No, quite honestly, either it's going to get stuck in some corner, but more
it's
likely
gonna
than not,
it's going to get chewed up.
It's going to get circulated around with you. All that oil eventually winds up between those gear teeth. Every last drop of it gets circulated, and this thing is going to get repeatedly squashed between those gears and squashed to oblivion. So I would, you know, here's what I would do. I would drive the thing around town. When are you leaving tomorrow?
No, it's actually a week from tomorrow.
All right.
Oh, you got a whole week to drive around?
What a deal. Now, here's what you should do. I think you should drive it for a short distance, maybe a couple of miles on the highway.
And then drain it.
And when you do, all the little pieces of this rubber tip will fall out.
Sounds good.
And if any gear teeth fall out, cancel the trip. See you, Jason.
Thank you very much. Don't worry.
It's going to be fine. And by the way, there were probably 25 other things that are going to break down on this trip. I wouldn't worry about the diff. Good luck, man.
This is a 12-year-old heap.
Don't worry. You'll be fine. See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. It's time to answer last week's puzzler. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You willing?
Yes. But I see where you're going with this, and I suggest you make willing your last question.
All right. This puzzler is from my high cholesterol series.
Meat or dairy?
Dairy, thanks for asking. We'll be back with the answer and more of your calls in just a minute.
So please stick around.
My first car was a beat-up Ford, manual choke and four on the floor. I set the points and I set the mix. There was nothing on it that I couldn't fix. Oil and water and alternator gauges. I ain't seen one of those for ages. Now all you get is some idiot light and it takes a computer. Put things right. I want a car with a carburetor. I want my coffee from a percolator. Write my letters with pen and paper. I want a car with a carburetor. I want a car with a carburetor.
And even though Terry Gross asks her agent if that offer from Hollywood Squares is still on the table whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. Mm. I did say this was from my high cholesterol series, but it's really more of a mathematical puzzler, and here it is. One day recently, Tommy decides to take a drive into the countryside, and after decades of being surrounded by bricks and concrete and grime, he decides to remind himself what plants look like. So he drives for a few hours and finally sees a woman attending to a little farm stand by the side of the road. He pulls off the road, and as he's getting out of his MG, he's suddenly taken with the woman's incredible tomatoes.
You could say that.
He's so taken, he trips and falls getting out of his car and knocks over a huge basket of eggs, knocking them to the ground and breaking all of them. Hmm. My brother gets up, egg dripping from his hands and his chin, and apologizes to the woman. I'll be happy to pay for these, Tommy says. How many eggs did you have in the basket? Well, I don't know exactly, said the woman with the fine tomatoes. But I do remember this. She said, this morning I tried to put the eggs in separate little bags. When I placed two of my eggs in each bag, I ended up with one left over. I didn't like that, so I took the eggs and put three in each bag. And when I did that, I still had one left over. Four to a bag, one left over. Five to a bag, one left over. Six in a bag, one left over. But when I put seven in a bag, I had none left over. Hmm. So the question is...
Wait. Why didn't she leave seven in each bag? Why'd she put them all back in the basket where I could knock them over? I mean, what's with her?
No. The question is, what's the smallest number of eggs that Mr. Clumsy here should have to pay for?
Oh.
Good question, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I debated whether or not to use this puzzle for a long time. This is a classic example of something called the Chinese remainder theorem. And to solve it, you can use that in something called modulo arithmetic.
Of course.
But I decided I would never be able to explain it on the air. And so I decided I'm going to do something different, a little different explanation.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do something I've never done before. I'm going to give the answer right now.
Yeah.
In advance.
Go ahead.
Usually I wait until the end.
Yeah.
How many eggs you have to pay for?
Yeah.
301.
Get out. I'm not paying for any 300 eggs. Forget it.
You knocked them over. You broke them. In fact, there's still egg in your beard. What's that yellow? Oh, man, that looks bad.
Well, go ahead. This is interesting.
Well, let's see how I got the 301 eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, we know that our number is not an even number, right? Can't be, because two to a bag, we'd have no remainder.
Yeah.
Well, what else do we know?
I don't know anything else.
Well, you're going to know something in a minute. When we put five to a bag, we also have one left over, do we not?
Yeah.
Okay. So we know that the number of eggs, the 301,
yeah,
had to end in one.
Well, how do we know that?
Well, because all the multiples of 5 are 5, 10, 15, 20, end in either 0
yeah.
or 5, so our number must be 1 greater than that.
Ah,
it
yeah.
can't be 6 because 6 is even, so it's got to be 1.
It's got to be 1. Yeah, that's good.
And what else do we know? Well, we also know that that number 301 has got to be a multiple of 7.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's got to end in 1.
Yeah.
Okay? So if we look at multiples of 7 that end in 1, here's what we get. We get like 21 is a multiple of 7 that ends in 1.
Yeah.
Okay. The next multiple of 7 that ends in 1 is 91, which is 7 times 13. Okay.
Oh, and you have to go through all this to...
No, well, I didn't. I didn't. The next one that ends in the next one that ends in 1, okay, is 161, which happens to be 7 times 23. The next one that ends in 1 is 7 times 33, which is 231. You see a trend here?
Yeah.
You may have noticed that in every case, these products are obtained by multiplying 7 times some number whose unit's digit is 3.
Yeah.
Like 3, 13, 23, 33.
Yeah.
Okay, but all of those fail. The only one that works is 7 times 43.
Uh-huh.
And 7 times 43 equals 301. And that's the answer. Do we have a winner?
Wow. Yeah, the winner this week is Linda Corey from Roanoke, Virginia, and for having her answer selected at random from the two answers that we got. From the many, many correct answers that we got. Linda gets a gift certificate for $26 to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which she can get our brand new 4-CD set, Field Guide to the North American Wacko, filled with 4 of our favorite shows.
And what, pray tell, makes these our favorites?
We charted the hate mail. And all 4 of these shows were in the low hundreds.
Excellent! Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show, so stay tuned for that. And feel free to call us if you have a car problem. We'll do our best not to make it worse. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, Tommy and Ray.
Hi.
This is Erin in Oak Harbor, Washington.
Hi, Erin. Oak Harbor, Washington.
Yes, it's on Whidbey Island.
Oh, of course.
Does that help?
No. What's up, Erin?
I have a 1972 Chevy pickup truck.
Really?
And when I go to accelerate at any speed, it shudders and kind of chugs, like there's a hesitation between the time the gas should be flowing to the carburetor or whatever.
Oh, like it dies out for a second and then takes off?
No. Yes, I think it kind of like... Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it's awful because it does this at any speed. And so if I'm going 50 on the highway, it's jerking slightly all the time.
You go on the highway with this heap? What are you, crazy?
Well, his car is only 5 years newer, so he shouldn't be talking.
Oh, that's right.
His car on the highway.
Hey, I want to get value out of this thing. It's only, 36 years old.
It's only, exactly.
It's not long.
Who works on this thing? Do you work on it yourself?
No, my friend who is in the Navy. There's a Whidbey, NAS, Whidbey Island. There's a lot of military folks here, and really nice young man. And when he has time, he works on it for me because he's very affordable.
Oh, how young a man is he?
Oh, I'm mid-30s.
And you are?
How old are you, Tommy?
I'm 110.
I thought so.
And well, you think I'm joking.
Well, his is what I think. I don't think he's old enough to understand this thing.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
seriously?
He wasn't even born when it was made.
All right.
Yeah, and this thing has 72, I believe still has points and condenser.
And those were fairly recently replaced.
Oh, they were?
And they were replaced as a matter of course or because they were trying to fix this problem?
I think it was a matter of course because actually this problem didn't arise until after I had that work done.
Right, and I'm willing to bet that they were adjusted incorrectly.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm willing to bet that, too.
And this vehicle, it's going to be a V8, right? Is it a
V8?
It is. It's a V8. It's got a little window on the front of the distributor where you put a special little Allen wrench, and you adjust something called the dwell angle. In order to do that, you need a dwell meter. You don't need to do it that way, but that's the way it always was done.
Yeah. If you need one of those, I got one.
He's got
one.
And you adjust.
Hey, thanks, man.
And when you adjust the dwell, and you do it while the car is running.
Okay.
That means that the points are opening up the correct amount. And if they're not opening up the correct amount, you're getting a very weak spark that when you try to accelerate hard from any speed, but especially from a dead stop, the spark can be so weak that the incoming mixture can blow out the spark and cause hesitation and stumbling.
Oh.
So I would ask this guy if he adjusted the points. If he doesn't have a dwell meter, he can adjust the points the old-fashioned way. He can turn the crankshaft and open them up to like 18,000ths, and that might make it run a lot better. But he still needs that little tool, that little Allen wrench, to turn the points. And if that gets corrected, I bet you your problem's going to go away.
Wow. I never thought about that.
And if he needs any parts that he doesn't have.
Yeah, Tommy's got them all.
Let me know. I got everything.
Cool.
including a couple of dwell meters. Good luck, Aaron.
You guys, thank you so much. I love your show. Your joy is contagious. Thank you.
Well, thanks for listening.
Bye.
See ya. See how much she likes us when the advice is wrong. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jillian calling from Brooklyn.
Hi, Jillian.
I have a 2005 Toyota RAV4, and the heating cooling unit seems to be the problem. When you first get in the car, it's fine and working great for about the first 45 minutes, and then it just completely goes out. You can kind of hear that the blower is working in the dash,
uh-huh.
And even if you have it cranked all the way up to high, there's no air coming out of the vents.
Ah, but you can hear something going on.
You can hear that behind there that the blower is still trying to work, but there's nothing actually coming out. And when you first get in and turn it on, it works great. It'll heat up the car or cool the car, but after you've been in for, I'd say, about 45 minutes, it just completely stops coming out.
And what do you do?
We either turn open the windows or put on a sweater.
Or turn our collars up.
Exactly.
And what's wrong with that?
I mean, 45 minutes is a long time to have heat. I mean, it's not bad.
I know. This is true. If you're on a 45-minute trip, it's not bad.
Yeah.
And no matter what you do with the temperature control or the directional control, you can't get anything to come out of this thing at all.
Correct.
And, of course, you haven't called a Toyota dealer because
I took it to our mechanic.
Ah.
And he took the car, and he actually drove it home, but I don't think he was in it long enough because he drove to Staten Island and he said it worked fine the whole time.
Well, here's what I think might be happening. I think you may be hearing the motor, but the motor's not really turning.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that the motor has the shaft of the motor has come loose from the fan.
Okay.
And in fact, it's turning, but it's not producing any flow because it's almost impossible for it not to push air someplace. So my guess is it's not pushing air anyplace because it's not pushing any air at all.
Okay.
So I would, if it were my car, the first thing I'd do is I'd take the blower motor out and see if, in fact, there's not a problem there.
Okay.
And it may be, and you can't, it makes obviously makes a different noise when it's malfunctioning.
Or you could just find it with your hand, and if you take your hand back and the fingers are missing,
right,
you'll know the fan is working.
Exactly. I don't think that fan will ever cut them off, but it'd bloody them up some. I'd use just one finger, maybe. Yeah,
all right.
You can always count on Tom for some good scientific advice.
Exactly. It's scientific, man. That's what I would do.
Well,
that's what
you call him, Lefty. So listen, I would take it back to this guy and ask him to drop the blower motor out and see if that's the problem.
Okay.
Because I have a feeling that's what it is. I mean, otherwise, I suppose it could be a vacuum problem, but it seems unusual.
Seems unlikely.
That it should occur after 45 minutes of driving, where it's more likely that something is happening to the motor where it may be seizing up or binding up or doing something like that and not actually turning that blower.
Okay, great.
And if you go to the Toyota dealer, they may have a service bulletin on this. There may be something that can help your mechanic where they say, oh, yeah, this happens to all of these.
Okay, great.
Good luck, Jillian.
Thank you so much.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, by the way, before I forget, last week, I believe it was last week, we got a call from a fellow with some kind of a Nissan, I remember. But he said that he would come out to his car and his windows would be down like 2 inches.
Oh, yeah.
And we made up an answer. We didn't really. We didn't know, but we suspected there was something wrong with his window switch. Or maybe there was a relay that was at fault. And that satisfied him. We got rid of him. But since we've gotten, I guess, some emails from other Nissan owners that said that it's a function that you can use your remote control, evidently, to open the windows. So if you were walking toward the car on a hot day, for example, I think maybe if you held the remote control...
To unlock the door, you mean?
And if you held it down longer, it would also lower the windows a little bit to let some of that hot air. I'm guessing that's what it is. But so there's nothing wrong. He just needs to read the book. And there's but there's nothing wrong with his car.
No kidding.
At least that's the current feeling.
So you actually read this mail that comes in?
No, Dougie told me. 888-CAR-TALK. No, I don't read it because most of it is ugly. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, guys. This is Wayne from Fairbury, Illinois.
Fairbury, huh?
Queen City of the Corn Belt.
Got it.
Ah, okay.
So you guys are sitting pretty now, growing all that corn, making ethanol, and...
We're in pretty tall corn now.
Yeah.
What's going on, Wayne?
In a moment of insanity, in 1974, I bought a Model A Ford pickup, 1929.
Really?
And drove it for a while and then thought I'd make a good gift for my dad and drove it here to Illinois. And he stored it in his garage or corn crib for a while and drove it in the 4th of July parade once in a while. Then stacked seed corn on it. And so I decided it was time to take it back to where I live in Salt Lake City. So. The problem is that it has a rust in the gas tank, and it will start up and run, and then the rust will clog the line. I took it into the local antique car expert here in Fairbury, Illinois, and he flushed the tank with acid and drained it.
Uh-huh.
But the rust seems to come back. What's the best thing to do here? He also put a filter in the fuel line, but do I need to take that thing off, and if I do, and coat it with something, or what should I do?
Nowadays, lots of tanks are made out of plastic, so we don't see the rust problem that we used to see years ago. But years ago when we had tanks that... And once the tank starts to rust,
it's gone for
you can't stop it. So either you can replace the tank, or you can have the thing epoxy-coated.
Epoxy-coated.
Yeah, where they basically take the inside of the tank and they coat it with epoxy so that they seal in all the rust.
Does the tank have to be removed from the vehicle?
I believe so.
That's the problem.
Why? You don't want to do that?
No, I'm afraid the whole thing will fall apart.
All right, then here's the other thing. So you put a fuel filter in the line, and the fuel filter should be able to trap all the rust. And if it doesn't, you might have to put maybe 7 or 8 of them.
So nothing wrong with putting more than one fuel filter in the line?
No, you can put several. What will happen, of course, is that the one closest to the tank will plug up first.
Yeah.
But you don't have to drive it too far, do you?
No. I took my wife for a drive out in the country, and we got 3 miles out, and it just died. I had to have it towed back. So she's not too thrilled about the whole thing at the moment. I'd like it a little more reliable.
But when it dies, you can be the hero. You can jump out, take off that dirty filter, stick another one on there, and off you go again.
Yeah.
Because your wife is never going to ride with you again. You know that, right?
It's almost to that point.
I bet. So I would say if you don't want to go to the expense of taking the tank out and having it coated, put several filters in line.
Okay.
And God knows there's plenty of room under that hood for all those filters.
Oh, there is, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So go to the parts store. You can buy a case of inline filters. and good luck, man.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
See you, Wayne.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, before we get to the new puzzler, we have to take a short break.
Sure. Take all the breaks you want.
Well, I know you don't need a break.
No, I don't. I have tremendous on-air stamina.
Yeah, it comes from not doing anything. Do you want to tell people about the upcoming puzzler?
Nah, you go ahead.
Somehow I had a feeling that was going to happen. The puzzler is from my spring break series.
Excellent. And we'll have more of your car questions, too, so please don't go away.
Here in my Mercedes, wondering what could be wrong with the engine. All my transmissions, keys won't turn on, gas won't go down, gear stick stuck, just my luck. Ladies shouldn't drive nice cars, they're only gonna break out. Soft green leather interior, parties black, system stacked, drives like it's flying above the road. Now it's broke. Oh no. Maybe you shouldn't drive nice cars. They're only gonna break our hearts.
And even though listeners say, sure, this isn't the longest day of the year whenever they're listening to us say it. This is NPR, National Public Radio. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and what? The new Puzzler.
Yeah.
You ready?
Go ahead.
And what did I say? This was from my spring break series?
You did say
I
that.
I did. And this came
whatever
in from a fellow
named...
I didn't know either. From a fellow named Richard Blythe. And I did kind of mess around with it a little bit, but the spirit of it is there, I think.
Yeah.
Some years ago, a college friend and I drove to Florida for a spring break. We spent most of our money on beer and babes, and like fools, we squandered the rest. But after a week that we mostly couldn't remember, broke and sunburned, we began to drive back to college. At one point, we found ourselves on a long stretch of a country highway that had two lanes in each direction. It was mid-morning, clear weather, no inky shadows, and it was anything but a dark and stormy night.
Yeah.
But off in the distance, we saw two trucks in front of us as they slowed and eventually stopped for a red light. One of them was a cement truck, and the other was a dump truck. And the dump truck had a tarp covering its load, which could have been anything from, say, wood chips to granite tombstones. No way to tell.
Yeah.
I was driving, and because our car and these two trucks were all heading in the same direction, I obviously had to stop behind one of them. So I asked my co-pilot what he would do. I don't know, he said. What does it matter? Well, I replied, I want to stop behind the truck that's likely to accelerate faster when the light turns green. Oh, he said. He started thinking about it, and he said, in that case, I'd stop behind the cement truck. And he was right. When the signal changed, the cement truck, although no jackrabbit, did beat out that dump truck.
So the question is, to pass.
Yes, did he have X-ray vision, or was it a lucky guess, or something else?
I say something else. Am I right? Wait, would that be an answer to the question? You didn't ask what a something else is. You just want to know, is it something
all
else?
All right, and what is that something else? If it is something else,
it's
what is it?
It's too late. I already won the prize.
All right, you get the $26. I'm going to give it to you in pennies. Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the underside of two Ameri Merc unsinkable floating chaise loungers made of forever buoyant Ensolite foam with two-position adjustable seat back, extra-wide seat, well, that's for you, contoured headrest, oversized armrest, built-in cup holders, and a well-trained, energetic pool boy. And send them to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a car question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Elizabeth from Baton Rouge.
Hi, Elizabeth. Elizabeth. We have to call you the formal Elizabeth, or can we call you Liz or...
Anything. Liz is fine.
Liz, Betty.
Not Betty.
Not Betty. Okay,
not
well,
Betty.
Not Betty.
All right, Liz. And you're from Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge, the red stick.
Yes, what's going
the
on?
Red stick, yeah.
Oh, geez. I think I have a lot of problems with my car. I have a 2003 Saturn Vue.
Okay.
All-wheel drive, V6.
Yeah, and...
Well, how many miles on this car, by the way?
78,000.
Okay.
And the problems are I have a very loud engine. It's gotten to the point where no one wants to drive with me anymore because they fear that they will lose their hearing. And it's, yeah, it's pretty bad. And it's like a very loud roar, like kind of like a 747 engine. And there's also like a helicopter-type sound going on, too.
Maybe like, the authorities are after you and you don't know it.
I know that. I'm like, am I running away from something? But it sounds like a do-do-do-do-do.
Okay.
But is this noise there the second you start the engine?
The roar of the engine starts when I put it in drive, and then the do-do-do starts sounding when I have to move.
And how fast do you have to be moving before you get the helicopter sound?
Anything.
Anything, as long as it's moving.
Yeah, and you hear the doo-doo-doos because the roar of the engine isn't as loud, like up to about 40 miles an hour, and you're, and I also hear like the shocks, you know, which is a nice rhythmic rock, but like a knocking type sound.
Boy, it sounds like this car has become, what's the word, a full-fledged jalopy.
Yes, that is exactly it.
But it doesn't
mean it's only got 78,000 miles on it. It's like a brand new car.
And my wheel actually doesn't shake until it's 65. And
whoa, what's that?
And I'm taking it to the dealer three times, and they run these diagnostics, which cost like $70, and they're like, "Oh, we just turned off your engine service engine light.
Check engine light." Has anyone actually taken a ride with you?
Oh no.
Well, I mean, I think it's imperative that someone drives this thing. It sounds like you have a wheel bearing that's going.
Uh-oh.
That might be the helicopter noise.
I'm writing this down.
Okay.
It sounds like you got a hole in your exhaust system.
Yeah, it sounds like that, too.
And that's what the room, 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 room is.
But see, the sound, you can't hear it unless you're in the cabin. Like, if my boyfriend comes to pick me up in my car, it doesn't sound like anything's wrong with it until you get in the cabin.
Oh, so it may be that, in fact, something's hitting the underside of the car. That it may be that you don't hear this outside the car, but if there's anything wrong, for example, if there's a motor mount that's bad or the exhaust system is hitting the underside of the car, it will use the cavity of the car to cause reverberation of that noise, so it sounds a lot worse inside than it does outside. So if your boyfriend were to sit in the car, would he then hear the noise?
Yeah.
You're not the only one who hears the noise then?
No, actually, everyone's pointed it out because it's been so gradual that I'd never noticed it, and I just keep the radio really loud.
Well, that's good because we were worried about you more than the car.
it's been so gradual.
We were beginning to worry about you, and a couple of family members have actually called, so we wanted to make sure that you're on the up and up here.
Yeah.
No, I think that...
I mean, these are not things that require a genius to figure out.
Yeah, I think anyone who sits in your car with you, anyone who's had training as an automobile mechanic, ought to be able to figure out in a few minutes where these noises are coming from.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the noise that occurs when you're moving and the shaking of the steering wheel could be telling us that you have a bad ball joint or a tie rod end, which could be very serious.
Because
wheels fall off when those things are bad. And there's no diagnostic machine in the world
that's going to find it.
That's going to find that. And the other noise that sounds like the Black Ops helicopter trailing you around town, I think that is worrisome because that could signal a bad wheel bearing.
I don't want to die.
You don't want to die.
No, you don't want to die.
No, no.
But you really have, if the dealership is not giving you any kind of support here, I think you have to go somewhere else.
Okay.
Yeah. Fine. Go onto our website, cartalk.com, and go to the mechanics files. And there you will find shops that have been recommended by other people in your area.
So I guess I have to clean out my car to have these people ride.
Has that been a stumbling block? We have people that don't bring their cars in because they're a mess. They say, oh, I didn't want you to see my car.
I usually throw everything in the back, hoping that they won't go back there.
I know. They're going to go back there, but the smells of a way of working their way forward. We often have to wear nose plugs when we get into certain cars. But,
oh, no.
But we're a little worried about you because this... A couple of these things are not good.
Well, I know my parents are probably listening, so they're probably worried about me, too.
Yeah.
Good luck, Elizabeth, but do this soon.
All right, I will. I'll do it right now.
See ya.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255 or 888-BBQ. You all. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Charlie from Fulton, Mississippi.
Hi, Charlie. What's going on in Fulton, Mississippi?
My wife, she has a 99 Chrysler Town and Country.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like she has a cricket living underneath the hood. The serpentine belt, you know, the backside of it, where it goes around the water pump pulley at, well, on the top of the pulley.
Yes, the belt doesn't ride with the grooves against the water pump. It rides with the backside, the smooth side against the water pump.
I've changed the belt, and I've changed the tensioner.
Right.
And I changed the water pump, too, because it went out. But that's where it's making a chirping at because, you know, you can get the redneck stethoscope, the water hose.
Yeah, the redneck stethoscope, yeah.
I've checked all over, and that's where it's coming from, where the backside of the belt meets that smooth pulley at. I can spray WD-40 on it, and it'll stop for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then it'll start back again.
Yeah, and you can even hear this in the car, huh, when you're sitting there at a traffic light?
Yes, sir. And once it starts doing it pretty loud, it turns into a squeal.
Really?
Yeah.
And you say, so you've replaced the belt?
Yes, sir.
And you said you replaced the belt tensioner.
Yes, sir.
All right. And you replaced the water pump, but it may be that there's something wrong with the pulley. And the only reason I say that, you replaced everything else. No, I used to have one of these.
There's not much else it can be.
No, in fact, you're sure that when you spray this WD-40 on, the noise immediately goes away?
Oh, yes, sir.
Did you try to wiggle the pulley at all?
You mean back and forth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've tried that.
It's good and tight?
Good and tight?
Yes, sir.
All right. Are you still in possession of all 10 fingers, Charlie?
Well, I broke one of them because it slipped in there.
But you still have all 10.
Because
you might lose one doing what I'm going to suggest.
Yeah, and you can afford one.
Right. If you said you were missing a couple already, then I'd recommend against this. But what you can try to do with the engine running is to apply some abrasive to that spinning water pump pulley. You know, you can get at it pretty easily with a piece of sandpaper. And mm-hmm. you might be able to dress this thing and give it a surface for the belt to bite into.
Okay.
And that will at least tell you if that makes the noise go away for a long enough period of time, it's going to tell us one of two things. And I think it's going to tell me that the tensioner isn't working correctly. I know it's a new tensioner, but I have a feeling the belt isn't tight enough. And by putting the lubricant on there, you're not making the tension, you're not making the belt any tighter, but what you are doing is reducing the action between the belt and the pulley so that you stop the noise. But it's only a short-term fix, obviously, and that's not a... Even if you could continually put that on there, all it would do is cause the pulley to slip more, and that's not what you want.
No.
You know, I do all the work on the van myself, but my wife's threatening to take it to a shop.
Oh, yeah, no, they're going to charge you $1 million because they got to make up for lost time. They haven't seen you in a while. So I would give it a shot, and maybe replacing the pulley is the quickest thing to do, but I'd try the sandpaper first. It's pretty safe because it's there's no danger of losing any fingers. If you're a competent do-it-yourselfer, you'll be able to get in there and sand that thing pretty easily.
Okay.
Good luck, and if anything catches fire, run like hell. See you, Charlie.
Thanks, gentlemen.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, you never know. 888-CAR-TALK, that's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Faye from Minneapolis.
F-A-Y or Faith?
F-A-Y-E.
F-A-Y-E.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, we've got a 93 Ford Aerostar, and last week... it kept killing on us and killing on us, and we took it in, and they said it was the catalytic converter.
Oh.
And I had a craft show coming up. I'm a crafter.
Uh-huh.
In 4 days that I had to load everything in the van and take it, and I didn't want it killing on me.
Yeah.
And my dad called, and he said, oh, all you got to do is take a screwdriver and just punch a hole in it.
Well, that worked.
We didn't try that
because
I was too scared to... poke any holes in it.
It's also a federal offense.
Yeah.
No, as we speak, your father is heading off to the federal penitentiary.
But it would have got you there and back.
Well, no, actually, we ran out quick and got another van. I used another van for the show.
Oh, so now this van is sitting in your driveway.
It's sitting on the street.
And when you say it killed on you, you were driving along and it lost power, and then finally stopped?
Yeah, and just... while you're driving it, and of course when you'd slow it down, then it would just go ka-chink and it would just kill. Not on the highway, but going 30 miles an hour or less, if you were slowing down, it would just kill on you. Or if you came to a stop sign or a stoplight.
Yeah, well, it could be something else too. I mean, who determined that it was the converter?
It's this place we always take it into.
Well, the definitive test and the simple test is to take the converter out of the circuit. And the easiest way to do that is to just unbolt it. And if necessary, you can unbolt the header pipe. And all the exhaust will come out without going through the converter. It'll be very loud, but if you can then drive the truck without it dying on you, then that pretty much would convince me that the converter or some other exhaust system component is plugged up. And sometimes what happens is the converter will disintegrate and plug up the muffler.
Oh.
In which case you need a muffler and a converter.
Oh, great.
But it's possible at its age, and I imagine if you're doing these craft shows, you probably have 190,000 miles on this thing.
Yeah, about 170.
Then it's very likely that the converter is plugged up.
And that's all it is.
You can't buy a used one. You have to buy a rebuilt one or a new one.
I know, and it's not worth putting one in, and they said it'd be $500.
Well, you might be able to get one cheaper than that. But you're going to have to do it, and you can't just ream the thing out because that will solve the problem. But it's illegal. You'll be polluting.
Yeah, I know,
yeah,
and I don't want to do that.
It's bad enough that we have to abide Tommy driving his 77 Fiat around.
It's perfectly legal.
And it's legal, and it did conform to the standards that existed back in 1877 when it was made. Well,
yeah.
Did I say 1877? It seems that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but there's no reason why you should be allowed to pollute, so you can't just knock the thing out.
And I don't want to.
No, I know you don't.
Yeah,
you know.
I don't. And but we're thinking maybe we'd just sell it to somebody who's handy and wants to redo things.
Well, yeah, exactly. So how did the crafts for you go anyway? And what do you sell?
Good.
What do you sell? Quilts?
Well, no, I make handbags. Ladies' handbags out of leather and tapestry.
Gee, you know,
no kidding.
I will confess that I used to do that too, many in a previous incarnation.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you were into leather, weren't you?
I made leather vests and handbags and all those kinds of things.
You're so multi-talented.
Back when I had hair and I was a hippie. Now I can't be a hippie because I don't have any hair.
Well, you know, I got to say, I missed the accent. I went to school in Boston in 1981, 82.
Really?
Yeah.
No, we were here.
I didn't see
you. Well, you probably didn't recognize me. I had hair then.
Uh-oh.
Good luck, Faye.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parodi. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor. Just back from the Portofino, Pellegrino, Crab Chopino, Maraschino, Jalapeno, Old Vine Pino, Cappuccino, and Full Strength Bino, C and B Cino is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Mara Genovera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our physical therapist is Estelle Hoyts. Our staff naturalist is Deirdre Oppings. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our luncheon chef is Hannah Mia Canatuna. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our Working Mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the Birkenstocks with socks retailers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 824, along with Car Talk clothing, audio collections, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce Division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, summer driving tips, revised for the summer of $4 a gallon gas.
Yeah, you know, gasoline prices may have changed, but there's one thing about summer travel that hasn't.
What's that?
Well, no matter what gasoline costs, you still don't want to overheat in Minot, North Dakota when it's like 115 degrees out and your mother-in-law is slapping mosquitoes in the back seat.
I think we can all agree on that. So check out our summer driving tips on our homepage all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though cesspool cleaners feel a wave of well-being wash over them when they realize they don't have to work with us, whenever we say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.